Welcome to the Lady Up America podcast. I'm Diane Canada, your host. So glad you're here today. It is Wednesday. It's November the 15th. And y'all, we got some crazy news to get to as we try to navigate this crazier and crazier world. Let's get right to it.
Founder of Lady Up America.
You know, the Lord warned us as we came into the end of the age that wrong would be called right, right would be called wrong, that we would see drastic differences in the way that people treated each other, the selfishness, all of these kinds of things. But I think in our lifetime, what we're experiencing is bringing that warning more and more to the forefront every day. You know, what we're going to talk about today is this new story that is continuing to develop out of the University of Wyoming, where the Kappa Kappa Gamma sorority has basically been pressured into accepting a transgender man into their female sorority. And all kinds of things have come as a result of that coercion. The girls that are in this very longstanding and very respected sorority have been forced to accept this guy that he goes by Artemis Langford. I think his real name is Dallin, but he is a 6'2" man who has decided that he identifies as a woman and basically has infiltrated this sorority. Now, what does that mean? Okay, we already are seeing this in women's sports, transgender men that have been accepted onto women's sports teams, and it's costing them trophies. It's costing them their lifelong ambitions to become champions in their sport. They're just being left in the dust by these men, just out of this woke ideology, this insistence that we, as a matter of inclusion and compassion, that we accept these men onto these women's sports teams. Well, now it's leaking into the sororities. And so far, it's this sorority, but this will open the door now. This will set a precedent for all the sororities to come. Let's get a little bit of clarity around the impact of this decision that has been made. Picture this, if you will. You're a young 20-year-old college student. You're in this dorm home with all these other sorority sisters. You're sitting around in your pajamas. You're maybe grabbing yourself a shower and walking through the halls with your towel on because it's no big deal because you're there with a bunch of other girls. But now there's a man that's introduced into the atmosphere. It's immediately going to make all of the women feel a little uncomfortable. But not only is he allowed into the atmosphere, he's allowed to move in. He's allowed to actually live there and be a part of the house. I can't even imagine how uncomfortable that must be for the sorority sisters, but let's not just talk about how uncomfortable it makes them, but how potentially unsafe it might be. This man, he's again a 6'2" man. He has been caught multiple times watching them when they don't really know he's watching, kind of lurking around corners or kind of shrinking back into the corners of rooms and watching them when they don't realize they're being watched. They have caught him with an erection. It's been very obvious through, you know, kind of tight pants that he's had on, they could see. And also he goes around putting a pillow in his lap to try to hide that. He has been very open about the fact that he is attracted to women. So this man's allowed to live among them as a sorority, quote unquote, sister. Now, one of the things we always try to do on this show is to lay aside the outrage, right? It is outrageous, but let's lay that aside for a minute and let's try to get clarity around which one of our founding values does this violate? Because as I teach you guys in the app and talking about on this show a lot, the way we get our center, the way we kind of get our clarity when there's a lot of smoke screens or a lot of craziness going on is to come back to our seven founding values. When we hear people say, what is the soul of our nation? This is what the soul of our nation is. It's these seven founding values. They precede the Constitution. In other words, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, all of that is kind of stacked on top of these seven founding values. They're the foundation. I also refer to them a lot as the load-bearing walls of our country that are holding our roof up, holding our country up. If one of these load-bearing walls comes down, then the roof of our country caves in. We no longer have a republic. Our founding fathers were extremely intentional when they set our country up to make sure that they gave us these load-bearing walls. After they studied other governments and saw what brought those down, they wanted to set us up for success. So they put these seven founding values in place again and built the Constitution around these. So the one I want to focus on tonight is human dignity. And let me just read it to you here. So human dignity says that because all men are created equal and in the image of God, every human life has dignity and value. Every person should be measured only by the content of their character. A just government protects life, honors marriage and family as the primary institutions of a healthy society, and embraces the vital cultural influences of religion and morality. Now, it goes on from there, but that is the most relevant part of that founding value that I wanted to share. So human dignity is really on the line here. The religious and the moral, the vital religious and moral aspects of our society have to be maintained. God created us in his image. He made man and he made woman in his image for a very intentional purpose. And we are not to, as a God-fearing, God-loving society, we are not to allow people to redefine what a man or a woman is. That is not of God. Confusion is not of God. The enemy is the author of confusion. So infiltrating this man into this sorority is not okay. We cannot say, oh, that's inclusive, oh, that's compassionate, because not only is that not God's design, but it's also not common sense for the safety of these women. Y'all, this is the education and civil rights issue of our time for women. We had a point in our history where we had to stand up and we had to fight for human dignity in other forms. We've had to fight for it when it came to the issue of slavery. We had to fight for it when it came to the issue of abortion. And now we're having to fight for it to protect women. So this is much, much deeper than just an emotional ideology. This runs to the very core of one of our most important founding values, and that is the value of human dignity. All right, ladies, joining us for tea time today is our friend Michelle Parker. She is the director of the Nashville chapter of the Independent Women's Network, a national organization that's really standing up for women. She's perfect for this conversation today. So y'all please welcome her into the show. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Diane. How are you?
I'm good. So good to see you. Cheers. I'm drinking my jasmine green tea today. So cheers from the studio. You know, Michelle, I am just, it's like, where do we even start? Like, this is an outrageous story that we're covering today about this Kappa Kappa Gamma sorority. We're going to dig into this conversation in a minute, but I think it's so important for us to just agree to set aside the outrage and kind of come back to level heads and say, okay, this is happening. This is a fight between good and evil. It's not political at this point. It's not even cultural at this point. It is a spiritual battle that we're in. And what do we do about it? How do we show up as women, as God's daughters, and respond in this insanity, in this upside down culture that we're in? So what are your thoughts on that first? And then we'll dive into the conversation.
Yeah, well, I think that, like you and I were talking about, as daughters of the King, above all else, it is important that we stand up for good and that we stand up for objective truth, which is his truth and the only truth. We are called to be salt and light in this fallen world. And sometimes standing up for truth means sacrificing the approval of man, which in this case, we'll find in this situation is exactly what happened.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, God teaches us in the Bible where when he says, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, you know, for us to follow the laws of the land, all of that. We are to do all of that unless it's in direct violation of his law. And then at that point, that's where the red line is. Yes, we follow whatever these laws are that's coming down unless they violate his law. And so that's where I think a lot of us get a little fuzzy. It's like, well, are we supposed to stand up? That confusion that can take place in our minds. And then in the fashion in which we do it, it really is just a matter of standing firm on truth. It doesn't mean being violent. It doesn't mean being ugly about it. It's just like God says in the Bible, let your yes be your yes and your no be your no. And it doesn't require a lot of theatrics. It's just a simple speaking of the truth and being willing to face whatever consequence comes your way from doing that. And I think that's where a lot of us chicken out because we don't want to lose things. We don't want to lose our creature comforts. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this case. So I was telling the ladies about it a little bit before you came on, and I know you and I have talked about it. So the Independent Women's Network is very active in this. One of your members, Patsy Levange, I believe is how you say her name. Is that right?
Patsy Levange.
I'll let you articulate this a little bit more clearly than I can, but help us understand the connection between Independent Women's Network and Patsy's connection to this sorority.
Absolutely. So Patsy Levange is a chapter member, is a member of Independent Women's Network. She also was a lifelong member of Kappa Kappa Gamma, and she actually previously served as the foundation president for Kappa Kappa Gamma. And as a result of her and another woman, Cheryl Tuck Smith, opposing the admittance of a trans-identified male into the chapter at University of Wyoming, they both were expelled. Patsy has been a member of Kappa Kappa Gamma for, I believe, 50 years and is foundation president for the organization, raised millions for the foundation. Let's just say that she left the foundation in a much better place than which she found it. And, you know, she just was doing what she felt called to do by our father and standing up for truth and standing up for the women of the sorority and their right to privacy and their right to a female exclusive experience. And I can tell you, I was not a member of Kappa Kappa Gamma, but I am a legacy alumni member of another national sorority. My grandmother was initiated into my sorority in 1928. She was very proud to have me join her as a sister in the sorority. And I was excited by the potential of inviting my nieces into that sorority as legacy members of the sorority. But since many national sororities, including my sorority, have changed have put out public statements around inclusion, which prioritize, you know, woke gender ideology over the rights and privacy of female members of the sorority, I'm hesitant to encourage my nieces to pursue membership in my sorority. And that's very sad.
Yeah, it is sad. You know, I think it would be interesting to paint a quick picture of what sorority sisterhood is like. You know, I didn't go to college. I've been an entrepreneur and I've taken a lot of courses and stuff over the years, but I never got to experience that college, that on-campus college sorority type lifestyle. But I was in a lot of groups where the camaraderie, and especially among women, was really, really rich and robust. And we did, you know, go into locker rooms together, and we did share in that privacy together, and we really valued that separate space. So I can kind of understand. But would you paint us a picture, maybe for other listeners today who were not part of a sorority? What is that supposed to look like or what did it look like for you on campus?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that one neat thing about a sorority is you do have tradition, and there is a furthering of values, which are core to the sorority. You really do find sisterhood and friendship within the bounds of the sorority. Another neat thing about the sorority is I think it really provides women the opportunity to develop leadership skills. You have the opportunity to run for office within the sorority and play a role on campus as it relates to leadership within the Panhellenic Council, which is the governing body over national sororities. I had the opportunity to serve as what was my role? It was around our teaching the kind of guidelines for rituals for our sorority. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for me, that was a really neat opportunity to step up as someone who is 19, 20 years old and play that leadership role. And that definitely was a first step for me in developing confidence and leadership, which I use today in my role as chapter leader for Independent Women's Network. So, I mean, I guess I would describe it as an opportunity to connect with other women who share your values and have the opportunity for friendship, which for many people lasts far beyond your college years. For that legacy also, I mean, especially for members of the sorority who had family members who were in that sorority. Like for me, that was very special, having my grandmother as an alumni member of the chapter, having that connection to that legacy of the sorority, and then the leadership opportunity, and also the accountability. Like a sorority beyond just your family at home, has standards for academics and has standards for how we conduct ourselves on campus. So for a young woman who it's your first time away from home, I think it's nice to have that built-in kind of familial structure on campus, as well as the accountability to hold you accountable and to support you as you're transitioning into your adult life.
I would imagine too, just looking out for each other, safety, things like that are important to, if someone doesn't come home, we know, to go looking for them. I'm sure there is a sense of belonging and like you say, kind of a pseudo familial structure to that. So when we talk about introducing a man into a female sorority, I mean, I can imagine just from the groups I've been in, I was in drill team and I was in color guard, and we had, there were times we stayed in dorms, for band camps, things like that. So again, it's a slightly different experience, but I know just from that, there were very strict rules about boys being even allowed on the floor, much less into our private sleeping spaces, things like that. So I can't wrap my head around how anyone could think it would be a good idea for a man to be not only allowed into those spaces, but to become a quote unquote part of that sorority. So again, laying the outrage aside, let's just try to get some kind of, if it's possible, perspective on how that would even be perceived as okay.
You're right. And that was the case, I will say. Within our sorority, men were only allowed in the common space of the sorority, and they were not allowed in the living quarters of the sorority because, I mean, that is your intimate living space. Like women and girls, I mean, that we were changing in those areas. I mean, it's private space. And so we had those guidelines for a reason. Like your boyfriend or your brother wasn't even allowed back in the private living space. And that's pretty standard. Yeah. So yes, an organization that was built on sisterhood, now admitting a male into that space, it's not only just I mean, it does change the dynamic of how you interact when you invite a male into that space, regardless of what he believes he is. It is requiring other women to accept his version of reality, which, I mean, then you're kind of lying to yourself and you're letting down your guard in that situation too. I mean, you're acknowledging someone for what they're not actually could be a safety concern for a woman in the future if she is taught to deny reality and acknowledge someone to be something that he is not. Then in another situation, regardless of if that individual poses a safety risk or not, it could cause that woman to condition herself to cause herself harm in the future. But not only that, it's just the aspects of sisterhood. I mean, they're just not there if you are initiating a male. And the bylaws for Kappa Kappa Gamma did state woman. And however, did not go so far to identify what a woman is, because when those bylaws were written in the 1800s, I mean, we never thought that we'd be to this point where we needed to define that a woman means adult human female at the end of the day.
There was central agreement on what a woman was or what a woman is. Like, I know it completely changes the dynamic when a man walks into a woman's private space. Riley Gaines has been on the podcast, as you know, and she shared with me how uncomfortable it was for them to be changing in the locker rooms and all that and have a man in the space, regardless of how he feels, how it made them feel, you know. And when we're prioritizing one person's feelings over a whole group of girls' feelings, not to mention the common sense safety aspects. I think what I've read about this guy, his name is, he goes by Artemis Langford. He is the boy who had the transgender man who has now infiltrated this sorority. I have read that they've caught him several times lurking around corners and staring at them as they dress and undress, that there's been a noticeable erection that he's had while watching them dress, that he's had to put pillows over his lap to try to hide the erections. So, and he's a 6'2" boy. So I can imagine this is only a matter of time before he acts on those impulses. And so the safety aspects alone, but yes, I think Patsy and Cheryl and a lot of these women who have stood up and said, this is not natural. This is not normal. We're not going to just, you know, lay down and take this. We're not just going to let this happen and put these girls in potential danger or put them in, you know, very uncomfortable positions, to say the least. So what has that cost them now? Expulsion. And they were willing to take that hit, which I think is great. But let's talk about their plight a little bit right now, and maybe what some of these other sorority sisters are facing as they're starting to stand on that truth.
That's true. And one thing that I'll bring up that I think brings a little bit more color into this situation. So both Patsy and Cheryl were, they were ousted from the sorority. They were expelled from the sorority after 50 years of service. A little known fact is that there was an alumni initiate who is a male who also identifies as trans, who was initiated into a chapter in Arizona. And he was previously a member of a fraternity, a national fraternity. And if a woman initiates into a sorority, a national sorority, we're not able to initiate into a different national sorority at any time in our life. So, you know, this male was offered, he was initiated into Kappa Kappa Gamma, and this was allowed by nationals. And he also participated in a training opportunity for leadership, which included, from my understanding, collegiate women. And so this was an adult male who was invited into the sorority, who was initiated into a men's fraternity while they expelled 50-year lifelong members of their sorority, one of whom had raised millions of dollars for their foundation and who had upheld the values and standards of the sorority. And so, I mean, that's a great example of how they are prioritizing ideology over the values of the sorority and the value of the women who have contributed to that sorority. And to me, it's just offensive. And then as it relates to Langford, he did not meet the scholarship requirements of the sorority. Like every sorority has guidelines. I believe that Kappa Kappa Gamma's GPA guidelines, I don't remember exactly what they were. Oh, they require applicants to have a 2.7 grade point average, and he only had 1.9. And as someone who has been a member of a sorority, like the way that the voting goes is if you go through Rush, you're not even included unless you, sometimes we make an exception for legacies, like someone whose mother or grandmother or had family members who are in the sorority. We often don't. We even sometimes don't make exceptions for legacies as it relates to our scholarship requirements. And they made an exception for this male to be admitted into the sorority. So again, it goes down to prioritizing ideology over the right to privacy and the right to a sex exclusive space for these women. And even if Langford, you know, even if he wasn't at all a risk, even if he wasn't lurking in the hallways, you know, regardless of any of that, the women, I think the women do have the right to have their privacy and have a sex exclusive space. And going one step further, you know, like we talked about, as it relates to the guidelines of the sorority not being allowed to initiate into another sorority, these female members of Kappa Kappa Gamma who are currently involved in this lawsuit at the chapter in Wyoming, if they wanted to leave Kappa Kappa Gamma, they couldn't initiate into another national sorority. So, I mean, that they're like stuck. They could leave and they may, you know, who knows? I don't want to speak for them, but they could leave, but they could not have the opportunity. They can't just vote with their membership and leave and join another national sorority. Like they have to make that decision to forfeit the sorority experience altogether or like start a local sorority, which isn't governed by Panhell. So that just, again, it shows how the feelings of these women have not been taken into consideration or the rights to privacy.
So I go back to the infiltration of the enemy. It really just goes back to the fight between good and evil. We are God's pride and joy, the human race, and what he intended for us, male and female, very strategically designed to complement one another, to fit one another, to reproduce together, the very, very sacred creation. If we look at the root of every single one of these ideologies, it is to somehow destroy that creation. God says in the Bible, the enemy comes to kill, steal, and destroy. And this is, it goes all the way back to Eden. What Satan did as a serpent, just planting that little seed in Eve, you know, well, what would be wrong with eating from this tree? What do you not want to, do you not want to know what it would be like to be like God? You know, and it really is people becoming their own God when they're void of that, becoming their own God or being so preyed upon to be sympathetic to these other ideologies. It's just Satan at work. It is so obvious. And so if we can get into the hearts and minds of people where they look at these transgender people wanting to become part of these sororities as inclusive and compassionate and all of that, never mind throwing out all of the compassion toward these poor girls who have to put up with this, but somehow luring people into this ideology and thinking that that's a good thing. It is just Satan at work. And I think we have to come back to that at the end of the day. When we look at it from elementary school all the way up through college, it is the ideology at the root of that is satanic in my opinion. Yeah.
It reminds me of Romans 1 and Genesis 1:27, the creation ordinance of male and female in God's image. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him of God nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal human being and birds and animals and reptiles. therefore, God gave them over to in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served created things rather than the Creator who is forever praised.
I'm glad you brought that scripture up. And it really is about his creation. Do you notice how everything, it all comes back to the sexual immorality? It all comes back to whether, even if it's not the act of sexual immorality, but the sex, the two sexes, the male and female sexes. It's like all the corruption eventually leads people down this path of following either their passions or completely distorting their creation. It's like it always comes back somehow to the sexes. When we look back in Babylon and the Roman government, and we look back at Sodom and Gomorrah and all that, it just follows the same pattern over and over and over, and the sexual depravity and the sexual ruin of creation. It's like the same story is told over and over and over again, and we're watching it play out here in the greatest country in the world. I'm glad that the Independent Women's Network and people like Patsy and people like Cheryl and people, these girls in this sorority, I'm glad that they're standing up. We have to, what is it that one great quote, I believe it was, that said, you know, the only thing necessary for evil to thrive is for good people to do nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and we have to not do nothing.
I've heard several biblical commentators and several apologists comment on the falling away, and when God-fearing believers or those that claim to be God-fearing believers, several of the reasons that they leave the church, there's three main ones. And one of the main ones is sexual immorality, like thinking differently around what God says about sexual morality, what God's design for sexuality. That is a major reason why people seek after themselves as God or fall into moral relativism. That it's money, and I believe it's money is the other one. And then the other one I believe is I don't know, but I know that for sure sexuality is one of the main ones and money is one of the other ones.
Yeah. Yeah. It always comes back to somehow desecrating the creation. As women, I think we have to focus on changing the culture, winning people back to God's values, showing them how God's ways are better, and that this level of depravity is going to just continue to grow if we don't fight it. We have to speak up.
Yeah. Well, I will mention that Independent Women's Law Center is supporting the Kappas in their appeal to the lawsuit that they have against Kappa Kappa Gamma. And there is a group of women who are gathering funds to fund this lawsuit. If you're interested in contributing to this fight, I mean, it is expensive to go through the appeals process, and it's very important that we win as many of these cases as possible as we stand up for truth and we create this precedent from a legal perspective, as it will play out, I have no doubt, in other states, in other cases. So important that we win this.
Wholeheartedly second that. If you can help, if you feel led to help, then please click there and donate. And we'll fight this together. We'll just lock arms together around the country and stand firm. Thank you so much, absolutely, Michelle. Thanks for all the work that you guys are doing at Independent Women. And always love having you on the show.
Thank you, Diane.
All right. So as we start to formulate our response, I want to bring us back one more time to the fact that our seven founding values, which are the load-bearing walls of our country, have to be protected. When you watch HGTV, and I know a lot of my listeners are fans of HGTV, I always like to bring up Ben and Erin Napier, right? When you see them remodeling an old home in their community in Laurel, what's one of the things they do right away before they start to tear down any walls, before they make any major changes to the house? The first thing they usually check for is the load-bearing walls. They want to make sure that they don't destroy any of those because they know that that's going to make the house incredibly vulnerable to the roof caving in. Any remodeling that they're going to do is not going to sustain because those load-bearing walls are so, so important. So when we see people in our culture that have hammers in their hand and they are trying to knock those load-bearing walls down, it is not only our responsibility, but it is our duty to step up and take the hammer out of those hands. We cannot just sit back and go, well, you know, I don't want to get involved, or, well, I'm not going to, you know, I don't know if I'm right. I don't know if I don't want to be canceled. I don't want the consequences, whatever your excuse might be. We cannot allow those excuses or those fears to stop us from stepping up and speaking truth. God called us for such a time as this. He told us to stand on truth, to stand on His word. There is power in that. It's not so much power in what we do. We may not have any power at all as human beings, but our power comes from the one who created us. And when you stand firm on His power, in His words, He shows up for you. He shows up for us in the public square, in the courtrooms, wherever, on the college campuses, wherever He's needed. He can be counted on to show up, to give us the words, to give us the wisdom, to show us what to do. There are people that are stepping up no matter what it costs them. I always say, go to God first and pray about it. If you're seeing something go on your college campus or you want to get involved, pray about it first and ask God to give you the wisdom on what your contribution can be or how you can, you know, make an impact on that particular discussion. But don't go off half-cocked is what I'm saying. Make sure you're prayed up and you've got God's prompting and wisdom. But once you have that, then step into that role, step into that room, step into that campus, whatever it is you're called to do, and know that you're on solid, sacred ground. The truth is on our side. But laying down and out of fear, shrinking back out of fear, that's not okay anymore. Like we don't have that luxury anymore. It might cost you something. It's costing the women something that are standing up now. It's cost me something, even to do this podcast. When you stand up for truth, the enemy's going to attack you. Know that. Just accept that. You know, it's hard to stand up and to do what's right. It's hard to stand up and open your mouth and have a voice. But you know, it's also hard watching our daughters and the women in our country completely be steamrolled by this ideology. You know what else is hard is watching our country go woke. It's also very hard to watch our anti-Semitism really hurt, endanger, possibly kill Jews. It's also really hard to watch our beautiful free republic to turn socialist. Pick your hard. What's harder? Standing up for God and making your voice heard and standing on that truth, speaking the truth out where it needs to be spoken? Or is it harder to just stand back and watch our country go down the tubes? So you got to pick your heart at this point, ladies. Again, pray about it. I'm not telling you what to do. Only God can tell you that. But I am telling you to choose Him, to choose His wisdom, to choose His promptings, and don't let fear hold you back. All right, let's get to our parting prayer. Father God, I thank You so much for the women that are listening to this today. Lord, I ask You to just rise up a righteous courage in them, Lord, that they would continue to learn from You. They would continue to grow in their faith, to mature in their faith, Lord, and that they would take that stand for You. Even if they're standing on trembling knees to do it, Lord, that they would take a stand for You in this society that is doing everything it can to just turn its back on You, Lord. We have to speak truth and we need Your wisdom in order to do that. So I thank You for that today, Lord. I know You're faithful. I know You'll show up and do that. We honor You and it's such a privilege to serve You. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, ladies, you can do this. You got this. Lady up. Lady up around this house. Lady up around this house. To read.